Welcome to the Keto Lifestyle Podcast, hosted by nutritional coach Jessica Tai, where we are dedicated to promoting health and overall well-being through nutrition, specifically the ketogenic diet. We will provide you with all the latest science in nutrition, interviews with experts in the health and wellness field, and answer all your burning questions so you can find optimal health. This podcast is not intended to be used as medical advice and is to be used for informational purposes only. Please contact your doctor with any and all medical questions. Now here's Jessica.
Hello and welcome to episode 80 of the Keto Lifestyle Podcast. This is your host, Jessica Tai, and excited to be here again this week with you. I know I always say that, but it's true. I really am. And life's crazy right now. We are in the middle of moving to a new home out on our farm here. If you guys follow me at all, you know that we have owned a farm with a cabin that we rent out as a vacation home. And we recently bought the neighbor's house a couple of months ago, and we've been doing some renovations there and moving. It's the end of the school year, and we're planning, you know, I'm planning my low-carb cruise trip here in about a week and a half. I'm so excited. I hope I get to meet some of you on that trip. Anyway, it's been really crazy. So I've been having a hard time being able to even get a spot to record. My office, where my nutritional business is pretty loud during the day. So that's not usually a place that I record. And I really hope this background noise isn't too bad here, but there's literally construction going on all around me, below me and outside the walls here. And I'm just really hoping it's not too distracting, because I don't have anywhere else to record right now. So I'm going to do kind of a mini episode for you guys. And what I'm going to do is kind of share some information that I have in a document that I teach in classes and in some of my you know, kind of smaller group things that I do. And so I don't know exactly how long this will take to do in a podcast, but I'm going to try to crank this out pretty quickly. And I think it'll be really helpful to you guys. So I thought it would be a good episode to do today. So let's just go ahead and get right into it. So the topic of this episode, as you may have seen from the title, is 7 days to beginning your new keto lifestyle. So this is just in order to just make it a little bit easier to kind of figure out what you need to do. There's so much information out there, and everybody's got a different opinion. And then even if you read all the information and you're like, okay, I think I know what I'm going to do, it's like, well, what do you do when? And how long does it take to do this? And how many changes should you do in a day? So this is a 7-day approach. So it's one change every day that is going to have you into your new keto lifestyle by the end of a week. And I think this is is just a really beneficial way to do it for people, because if you try to make too many changes at once, it's just too hard. You just get overwhelmed and you're like, no, you know, most people kind of rebel against that. It's just, there's just too many things to do, or it's just overwhelming, or you just can't remember every day all the different changes you're supposed to be making. So I feel like if you can do one simple change every day, and by the end of the week, you have 7 new things that you've begun to do, or not even 7 things that you're doing every day. Some of these are just one thing that you will do to get started. And maybe you won't do that thing again the rest of the week, or maybe you will. So these are just 7 changes that you can do to get you started. So on day one, the first thing I like to see people do is take measurements and before pictures. So what kind of really makes me nuts is the scale and having you weigh yourself as you start this new lifestyle. It is great if you lose a bunch of weight and you think that's, you know, super, and I know that makes you feel good and it's motivating to do that. But we read so much on all of these different like Facebook sites or Instagram and these before and after, you know, keto things, and all of that can be encouraging, but can also be discouraging if you're reading that and seeing so-and-so lost 20 pounds, 50 pounds, 80 pounds, you know, whatever it is in the first month or the first, you know, 7 days or, you know, whatever. And then you are weighing yourself and you're going, wait a minute, that's not happening for me. Well, the difference is, there's so many differences, but you don't know what that person's lifestyle is. So maybe that person has 150 pounds to lose. Well, traditionally, if you have a lot of weight to lose, it's going to be easier in the beginning for you to have bigger weight losses than someone who maybe doesn't have as much weight to lose. You don't have as much extra fat on your body. That can be a slower process, and that can be very frustrating to see those numbers just kind of slowly tick away. It can also really matter if how metabolically kind of deranged your system is. If you've got a lot of healing that needs to be done, that kind of thing may take a much longer period of time for you, and it may not be something that just happens quickly where everything just is falling off. And that just may not look like how it's happening for you if your only source of measurement is weight on a scale. People that you're comparing yourself to may not be exercising at all, for example. And so if you are, and you're somebody that maybe is in the gym lifting weights, or you're running, or you're doing something like that, you may be exchanging muscle for fat, and muscle weighs more than fat. I think most of us have heard that, and so we're kind of aware of that, but we don't really maybe think of it, or maybe we don't 100% believe it when we are the ones that we're measuring by the scale. So it just remembering that maybe that person that you are comparing yourself to is just kind of losing all of this weight because they're not changing their body composition. They're not actually building muscle while they're losing the fat, where you, on the other hand, may be building muscle while you lose fat. So while you may be losing a lot more pounds than you think, you're replacing some of that with good muscle weight. So it's important to just think about things that way. So the best way to really know what kind of progress you're making is to take measurements. So I prefer, if you have access to like a DEXA scan, or I have a Fitbit Body 3D scanner in my office that I use for clients, and the general public can come in and use it. So if you're not my client, but you're local to the Cincinnati area and you would like to use that, you can certainly set up an appointment, come in and do that. But that is a really great way to do it, as a DEXA scan type machine, where you're going to get all of these very specific numbers and measurements. But if you don't have access to that, the next best thing is to take body measurements. So get out some measuring tape, measure things like your measure your thighs, your hips, your waist, your bust. You can even measure your biceps and things like that if you would like to measure those. And then you can do weight if you want, but maybe more importantly is to put on a bathing suit, or, you know, some underwear and a bra, and stand in front of the mirror and take a picture. And then just make sure that when you do comparison pics, you are standing in the same position, in the same outfit as possible. And you're going to get a lot more information from something like that than you are from jumping on the scale. Okay, so that's pretty much all I have on that one. Okay, so that's day one. So you're just going to do that day one. That's all you're going to do. That's your first step to starting your keto lifestyle. Nothing else. So that's pretty easy, right? Okay, day two, you're going to start a journal. So I want you to journal every night or every morning, but just make sure that you're journaling. So this is a great place that you can keep your measurements. You can write down how you feel each day. You can keep track of what you're grateful for, because we can often be focusing on things that get tough, because things don't always go super easy when we're trying to make big changes. And sometimes just human nature is we'll kind of focus on the negative things or the tougher things. So just trying to focus on the positive things is really good. So write those things down. It's also a good place to write down what you ate and how it was affecting you. So when I have clients, I have them keep me a food, what's called a food and mood journal. And what they do is they will write down every single thing that they eat, what time they ate it. They will write down any activity, what they drank, any supplements that they took or medications, and how they felt. And how they slept, when they went to sleep, when they awoke, and how they felt when they slept. And so much information can be extracted from that information being written down. So I think it's really important to do that. So a journal is just a great place to keep all the information. And a lot of times it's a great way to keep yourself motivated, because you know that you're going to have to write in that journal. It's almost like an accountability partner. You're writing in that journal every day. You know you need to do it. It's part of what you're doing. You're creating a new habit as well. And just important, very important step. Okay, so that's day two. So far you have measured yourself and taken a before pic, and you've started a journal. Pretty easy, right? Okay, so now we're at day three. Day three is where we're gonna get a little bit more serious. This is the day that you are going to say no more sweets. So you're gonna cut out all sugars, artificial or natural sweeteners, cookies, candies, sugar sweetened drinks, fruit juices, all fruits, alcohol, this includes wine, sorry, gums and mints, okay? This is just getting everything out of your life that is triggering any type of craving for sugar, and alcohol is actually one of those things that can trigger that. So, and this is not like a all or nothing, like you're never gonna get it back kind of thing, but I do advise that some people can add these things back in moderation, but when you're starting keto and really helping your body to become adapted, the best way to do it is just quit everything cold turkey. You just have to. For some people, that's easier to do. Some people are like, okay, no big deal, I can do that. For some people, they're like, oh my gosh, well, you know, that's not that big of a deal. You know, what I can't give up is all the starchy things. Well, that is the same deal. So all of those starchy foods that you eat, those things really fall into that same category. So you have to think, when you are eating those starches, those potatoes, the rice, all of those kind of things, they're really falling into that same category. Now, I don't have those added in to the 7-day start to keto, but that is something that would be beneficial to you if you could be cutting those back significantly while you're doing this. So we're kind of prepping you, because on day 8, you're going to go full on keto. This is when you're going to start tracking macros, you're going to make sure you're keeping your carbohydrates low, etc. So any of that stuff that you can kind of take away now is going to make that transition a lot easier. But definitely the sweets, the sugars, the fruit juices, the fruit, the alcohol, you've got to cut that stuff out now. That's going to make it much easier in about 5 more days when you're going to start more of a strict keto lifestyle. Okay, day 4, you're going to drink more water. Good old H2O. So ideally, you're going to drink half of your body weight in ounces a day. So if you weigh 150 pounds, you would roughly drink 75 ounces daily. However, do not exceed 128 ounces a day. So, you know, do the math, figure out what you need to be drinking. If you do drink coffee or tea, then you will need to drink 1.5 times that amount in ounces in addition to the normal daily ounces that you've figured out. So those are diuretics, and anytime you drink a diuretic, you're going to need to make up for that 1.5 times. So often our cravings and hunger are really caused by thirst. We can just be super thirsty. We can be low on electrolytes, low on other minerals. So it's important to make sure you're getting plenty of water so that you know for sure that that's not the problem. And if cravings do hit, that's a really good time to drink water. So just remember, you know, hey, if you're craving sugar or you have a bad craving, you think you're not going to be able to get past, just go get a glass of water and drink that. If you're having a hard time remembering when to drink, a little trick that I use is to place colored hair bands or rubber bands, loose fitting ones, of course. You don't want them to be, heavy, but, or just like bangle bracelets, whatever works for you, on your wrist. And then for every 8 ounces of water, you want to put those on for every 8 ounces of water that you need to drink a day. And every time you consume, you finish an 8-ounce glass, remove one of those bands. So then you know when you get to the end of the day, if your wrist isn't bare, then that's how much water you are short for the day. So you want to do a little bit better the next day. Now, if you're 60 ounces short at the end of the day, don't grab, 8 glasses of water and down them. You want to be drinking this throughout the day. So it's just a reminder for you to be like, oh man, I'm really going to need to step it up tomorrow because I'm clearly not drinking enough early on. So hopefully that makes sense. Okay, so that's great. You've got day 4 down. Okay guys, so now we're gonna move on to day 5. And I'm sorry, the audio quality has probably gonna be a little different and changed on here. I had to move out of the house. The construction was moving inside and was going to be way too noisy. So I'm actually recording this in my car. So Oh, I apologize about this, guys. Okay, so moving on, day five. So day five, talked about this a lot on this podcast, and that is going to be getting good sleep. So this is really important. I think we all know how important sleep is. It's talked about all the time now. It's kind of finally getting its day in the sun, very rightly so. And so very important step, and making sure that you get good sleep is really going to help you be able to do this keto lifestyle well, really any lifestyle well. But specifically for keto, there's a few different reasons that this is super important. So often, if you are overly tired, you are really going to have a hard time making the right dietary choices. Your brain's just tired, and being able to kind of have strong will and overpower cravings and things like that when you're overly tired is just magnifies the difficulty of doing those things. And it is a fact that when we're sleep deprived, our brains will tell us to get quick fuel. And that quick fuel comes in the form of glucose. And that's exactly what you're trying to move away from. We're trying to get our bodies to be fat adapted and move away from being sugar burners. So we really need to make sure we're focusing on sleep so that we don't also have that stacked against us. Sleep deprivation also causes us to have naturally elevated levels of glucose, which will cause us to have elevated levels of insulin, and that ultimately leads to reduced levels of ketones. So one of the kind of tips that I usually try to give my clients is setting their circadian rhythm, because that can make it so much easier to get to bed early enough and get good quality sleep, and then get up at a good time in the morning. Getting that circadian rhythm set just makes you naturally kind of start to be tired at the same time every night and naturally want to wake at the same time every morning. And once you get that set, you'll see that to be true. It's, you know, I used to think going to bed, you know, I shoot for 10 or 10:30. That's kind of like the magic hours, really. Between 10 and 11 is the magic time to go to sleep for most people. So I used to think, oh my gosh, there's no way, that's too early. There's no way I can go to bed at 10 or 10:30 at night. You know, I was definitely a night owl, staying up till, you know, midnight or later, and then just dragging myself out of bed in the morning to get up with the kids and get them to school or whatever. I mean, 8 o'clock was like, oh, this is torture. And when I had to get up with the kids at like 7, I was just dying. Well, now, you know, naturally I'm getting tired around 10 o'clock and love the nights that I can go to bed at 10 or 10:30 at the latest. And my body naturally, if I don't have an alarm set, like if it's a weekend and I'm trying to sleep in, I still will naturally begin to wake at about 6:15, 6:30 in the morning. And that's good. It's good to kind of stay in that circadian rhythm. So even on the weekends, you go to bed at about within an hour of your normal weekday bedtime and still rise within an hour. So I try to stick pretty close to that. On the weekends, I'll usually go to bed closer to 11, 11:30, and then I'm getting up closer to 7:30 or 8 instead of like a 6 or 6:30. So I might be stretching the numbers a little bit there, but you kind of get the picture, right? So definitely want to try and work on setting your circadian rhythm so it'll be easier for you. And a good way to kind of let your body start producing melatonin and getting you into that sleepy state that you will be set up to go to bed is you really want to turn off screens an hour before bed at least. So that's no phones, no computers, no TV, none of that stuff. And I know that can be hard because, like many of you, you know, my husband and I, after we get the kids to bed and the day is done, you know, sometimes we want to just sit down and relax together and maybe watch a show and, you know, we call it vegetating. We just want to sit around and like just let our brains kind of shut off. But though it feels like that's what we're letting it happen, all that blue light is actually amping our brains up and making it more difficult for us to get to sleep at a good hour. So unless we can start our TV watching earlier, then it's really something that we shouldn't be doing, and we try to stick to that rule. although I know it can be hard. So a couple of good things that you can do instead of the screen time is get yourself a good book to read and read before bed. I know reading always makes me sleepy. It always allows my melatonin to kick in and I start, you know, getting really heavy eyelids and I'm like, oh, I just can't keep my eyes open. Even if it's a book that I'm really into and I really want to keep reading, but I can't because I just can't keep my eyes open. So I love being able to fall asleep like that because as soon as I put the book down and put my head on the pillow, it's, you know, lights out, nighty night. Another great thing to do is we talked about journaling for day two of your 7-day keto, you know, intro into the keto lifestyle. So take that journal out and write out a list of to-dos for the next day. So I know a lot of times for me, I have a hard time falling asleep because I can't shut my brain down. Do you ever feel like that? Like you just have all these thoughts running through your head and you're thinking about what you're going to do the next day and you're just like, oh gosh, I'm going to forget all this stuff and I think about all these things I should be doing. And sometimes I even get up out of bed and will go, you know, put things in my car or go gather up some things that I was like, oh man, I forgot to do that earlier in the day. So instead of doing that, take out your journal and make a to-do list for the next day. It's fine to use space in your journal for that. And it kind of helps you download your brain onto the paper and it just kind of gives you this overall sense of like closure. Like, okay, I got it down on paper. I have a plan. I know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to forget everything in the morning because I wrote it down. And those thoughts that come to you at night when you're trying to go to sleep, it's okay to write those down. So you're not just kind of ruminating on those over and over and over while you're trying to fall asleep. Okay, so hopefully that helps you. Definitely want to get some good quality sleep, guys. Okay, so moving on to day six. Day six, you are going to start tracking your macros, okay? So this is the day that you're going to really start learning how you are going to make sure that you are going to be in ketosis by day eight. So you may not hit ketosis, you may not start producing ketones on day eight, but we are really, day six here, we're tracking your macros, and day seven, day eight, I really want you to be in this keto zone, right? Like you've got everything in order to start really dialing in this ketogenic lifestyle. So, and you may have to tweak with the numbers a little bit. You know, you may have to kind of play with them and figure it out so that you know that you are going to be producing ketones, but this is where you're going to start. This is how you're going to know those things. So I definitely, I'm a proponent of tracking in the beginning. I think it's really helpful. Now, I don't think you need to track forever, and I don't think that it's something that you need to get obsessed about or feel like, oh, you're not keto if you're not tracking. I definitely don't think that that's true. But for most people, how do you know what you're eating if you're not tracking it? I mean, it's really something you have to learn. It's a skill that you need to gain. You know, most of us we're not born just naturally knowing like, oh, okay, that piece of cheese has X amount of protein and X amount of carbs and X amount of fat. And so, you know, you're calculating this all day while you're eating. You really have to learn this stuff so that it becomes easier to you and then you don't have to track forever going forward. So general guidelines to get you into ketosis effectively is a 70-25-5. So what that means is you're going to have 70% of your daily intake of food is going to be in fat, of your calories is going to be fat, 25% of protein, and 5% carbs. Okay, so that can look different for everyone. So I have people often reach out to me, women especially, and they'll say, oh my gosh, I'm eating 130 grams of fat and I'm tracking my macros and it says I'm right on, but there's no way I'm supposed to eat that much fat. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I eat probably 120 to 140 grams on an average day of fat. So that's fine. So don't get so wrapped up in that number. What you really need to focus on to get the results that you are going to need, what is really going to matter in producing ketones and what people see, what studies show, what I just see clinically, like through my clients, is getting that carbohydrate number down. You need to keep your carbs definitely under 30. And most people, kind of the sweet spot is in the 20 to 25 grams per day range of carbohydrates. Okay. So, that for most people, that's going to end up being about 5% of your daily intake of macros is going to be carbohydrates. So, and you know, if you want to start out tracking net carbs, so net carbs are the total carbs minus fiber, and that's going to give you your net carbs. If you want to start off tracking that, that's fine with me. If you track that and you are able to get into ketosis, and you will know that from testing, if you are able to do that, then that's fine. Go ahead and do net carbs if that makes it a little bit easier for you. But this step is just really about understanding what is in your food and learning how to track things, learning how to track those macros so that you understand, because we can think we know that something is quote unquote healthy, and then we think that makes it keto. And then once we start tracking, we realize, oh my gosh, this is why I'm not losing weight, because I'm not in ketosis, because I'm blowing it with, you know, whatever said food is, and my carbohydrates are through the roof. So just that's what I want you to track for, is I just want you to learn what is in the foods that you're eating so you're more aware. You know, knowledge is power. You need to know this. So tracking that, figure out, you know, what is in the foods that you're eating. So you don't have to necessarily change your entire diet at this point. We've already cut out the sugar, and I've told you to keep your starches and carbs, you know, kind of start keeping those a little lower. But this isn't even so much about trying to get within those numbers. That is the general guidelines. But right now, I just want you to track what you're eating so you can see where you are. Because a lot of times we think, oh, you know, I'm not doing bad at all. And then we realize that, oh my gosh, I'm eating 200 grams of carbohydrates a day. I had no idea. And that can be a real eye-opener for you. But don't let it make you feel defeated either. I don't want you to track these numbers and then go, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to get down to 30 grams of carbs. You can. It can be done. And it's not as difficult as it sounds. But that's why we're doing a seven-day approach, okay? You're just learning this, and you don't want to overwhelm yourself. You're just doing a little bit at a time, okay? So keep focused on that. So a couple of apps that you can use. My favorite is CarbManager, and you can do, there's other apps that you can download to map the or to track these things. Even MyFitnessPal will track them, but CarbManager I like a lot. There's a lot of recipes and a lot of things in there that apply to your keto lifestyle, so it'll be easy for you. And it's a little bit more difficult in the beginning because you're putting things in, but most of us generally eat kind of the same few foods kind of over and over with some different ones sprinkled in here and there. So once you kind of get that, those things plugged in, it's really easy to just go pick them from your food list from then on out. So every time you eat it, you can just pick it and goes into your tracker, and it makes it so much simpler. So Carb Manager is great. So make sure that you're accurately checking everything that you eat into the program, okay? Because this is what is going to help you figure out where you need to make changes and what you need to tweak to get this, you know, dialed in. Okay, so that's day six. All right, now we're going to move on to day seven. So this is your final day of kind of your intro into keto. And day seven, you are going to begin testing. So a lot of people are like, well, you know, I don't want to test, or you don't need to test, or, you know, whatever. Well, I kind of say to that, like, how do you know if you're in ketosis unless you test? I mean, it can feel different to everybody. Sometimes, you know, you feel this euphoria and you'd feel this mental clarity, or, you know, maybe joints stop hurting and things like that. But, you know, ultimately you don't really know if you're in ketosis unless you're testing. And I think it's just a really good life skill. I mean, you should know how to check ketones. You should know how to check your blood glucose. That may be the more fascinating thing than ketones, really, is even just knowing how to check blood glucose. And it's really helpful because, especially as you're diving into this keto lifestyle, if you're like, man, I've got all my macros dialed in and I'm not producing these ketone numbers that I want. What you can start doing is, once you've learned how to check blood glucose levels, you can begin to test against foods that you're eating. So, you know, or maybe you notice that on some days you're getting good ketone readings and then on other days you're not. And so you're going to be journaling and you're going to be tracking macros
and you're going to be, you know what you're eating. So you can go back and look at those days and be like, oh, you know, I'm kind of seeing a pattern. When I eat this, my ketone levels are either non-existent or they're much lower. I wonder if that's affecting it. Then when you eat that food, you can test after eating that and see, hey, does my blood glucose spike? Is this affecting how my body is being able to, effectively handle sugar here? Is this, am I having a reaction from this food? Because remember, if you're keeping insulin levels spiked, if you've got constant insulin production going on because your blood glucose levels are high, you are not going to be producing adequate ketone levels. So that's an important thing to know. So I think that's it's just a really good thing to be able to do. So I think when people are just kind of thinking they've done everything right, they've listened to all the podcasts, they've done all the research on the internet, and they just can't seem to lose weight, or they just can't seem to feel like they've got this, you know, things are working good like they think it should be, then, you know, I really think that this is where the testing comes in, and you know once and for all, like, am I producing ketones or am I not? And how much am I producing? You know, am I just barely producing any ketones, or am I like really cranking these puppies out? There's other factors that could be keeping you from producing ketones. It could be, you know, the hormones are such a determining factor of weight loss and gain and ketone production and good sleep and all this kind of stuff. And all those things affect hormones. So it's like this, you know, everything is working symbiotically together in your body. And so being able to test and know where all this stuff is falling into place can really help you out. So, maybe you're testing and you're not in ketosis and you're like, man, I know the missing link has got to be sleep. I'm still not sleeping well. I'm still staying up late on screens, you know, right before I try to go to bed at midnight. And then I'm, you know, dragging myself out of bed every morning at 6 or 7 a.m. Then that may be your key. You may be like, okay, I'm not producing ketones and all my macros are dialed in to what they're, you know, quote unquote, supposed to be. So that could tell you that the sleep is what you need to look at. Okay, so there are lots of different tests out there that you can get. I use the Keto Mojo, and if you go to my website, there is a link on there. I am an affiliate with them, but please know that I never recommend any product at all that I do not believe in and don't use myself. So it will give you 15% off if you use that link to purchase, and it's off your entire order. So it will automatically calculate the 15% off for you at the end. But if you go to my website, there is a link on there. You can click on that link and order a Keto Mojo. But there are other brands that you can order. There are other brands out there, so you can probably just Google that. But the Keto Mojo has the ketone strips and the blood glucose strips. So I would recommend getting a kit that has both of those, and you can kind of learn how to use those. And then, being able to use both of those. And what numbers are you looking for when you test? Okay, well, really anything above 0.5 millimoles means that you are producing ketones, but striving to kind of get closer to that 1 to 2 millimole may be better. I know some individuals never get above 1 millimole and they still lose weight, have health issues resolved, they feel great. So it's really about finding what works for you. If you never get above 1 millimole, you know, 1.0, and you feel great, then fine. I mean, I'm typically around 0.7 and I feel great. But I'm also in maintenance mode. And I think that after you've been, there's been some research done about this. There are some experts out there that are now starting to talk about this, but it seems that once you've become fat adapted and you've been at this for a while, your body starts getting better at utilizing the ketones that it produces and only producing what it typically needs on a daily basis. So, our bodies aren't much for doing a lot of stuff they don't need to do and producing waste. So, you know, if you pretty much lead the same typical lifestyle day in, day out, the same kind of exercise routine, the same type of sleep patterns, that kind of thing, your body starts realizing how much ketones your liver actually needs to produce. And it will start to kind of regulate producing that amount of ketones. And so, you know, your body, you may not be hitting these 2 or 3 millimoles anymore. You may be hitting lower millimoles. That's kind of the theory. So, and I'm subscribed to that theory. I believe that because I've seen that happen with myself. I used to produce much higher ketone levels and now they're much lower and I still feel just as good. I'm still at the same weight. You know, I've kind of leveled off and I'm just in maintenance mode, have been for the last, you know, year and a half. And I've seen my ketones reflect that. So that's kind of what I think is going on there. But once you kind of figure out like what works for you and what the macros are that work for you, how you need to eat, like how you feel when you're producing ketones, then I think it's, you know, you don't really need to keep testing. And just know that what works for you now may not work for you a few weeks from now or a few months from now. So it might be a situation where, you know, you get good, you know, you're like, hey, this is a great way to eat. I know I've got my macros dialed in. I don't need to test those anymore. I don't need to track those. I don't need to test ketones anymore. You know, maybe start, you know, feeling like that. And then you just test every now and then, maybe, you know, once a month or something. Or if you change things up, then you, you know, maybe try testing again, or you, you know, go back to tracking a little bit to see how things are going, or maybe you start feeling like, geez, you know, I don't know if this is still working as well for me as it used to be. So all of those different things, can matter and can make a difference on whether you still should be testing or not. So, okay, guys, that's all I've got for you today. So I hope that that really worked for you. And I hope that you guys took some notes. And of course, I will put all of these, at least the 1 through 7, I'll put them in the show notes so you have those. So I'll go over them again really quick. Day 1, take measurements and before pics. Day 2, you're going to start your journal. Day 3, no more sweets. Day 4, you're going to drink more H2O. Day 5, you're going to get good sleep. You're going to start that good sleep routine. Day 6, you're going to start tracking your macros. And day 7, you're going to start testing ketone levels. So that will take you to day 8, which is when you are all in. You're going to continue to do those things and you are really going to be in your new keto lifestyle. So from that day on, it's just going to be about tweaking. You just tweak things here and there, figure out what works for you. You know, how much exercise, how little exercise, how many carbs, how little carbs, how much fat, how little fat. You're just going to play with it from there. Okay. There's no right or wrong answer. There's no perfect formula. We are all individual and you have to figure out what works for you. The idea is not that there is a perfect keto diet. The keto lifestyle that works for you is the one that has you producing ketones and has you being a fat burner. All right, guys, that's all I have for this week. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and we'll touch base next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Keto Lifestyle Podcast. We hope that you enjoyed what we shared with you today and are looking forward to the next episode.